If you measure the universe by energy, the humbling fact is that stuff like us, atoms and molecules and stars and gas and planets and so forth, is only 4% of the universe. And we sort of had a hint of that for a long time, and that sort of became more and more clear. There's also this stuff called dark matter, which was hinted at for a long time and became very believable in the 1980s and is now more or less beyond reasonable doubt, but that's only 23% of the universe. So in 1998, we figured out what the other 73% of the universe is, and that's this stuff called dark energy. This not even a particle, not even some sort of thing you could lay your hands on. It's just the energy of empty space. If you have nothing at all, how much energy does it have? Well, Einstein said even empty space can carry energy, and everyone thought that that was an interesting hypothetical speculation but wouldn't apply to the real world. In 1998, we saw its effects. That energy of empty space is pushing apart distant galaxies, and they're actually accelerating away from us. You'd expect that our gravitational pull would pull on the galaxies and their gravitational pull would pull on us, and we would eventually begin to come together, but in fact, they're moving away from us faster and faster. So that implies that there's dark energy.
I'm thinking of this conventionally, and I'm probably very wrong, but I've got to ask you this question anyways. If all these objects in the universe are speeding away, eventually, do they come to a wall at the end of the universe? I mean, what's there, or is it totally endless? And that I'm having a difficult time trying to comprehend.
Yeah, this depends on how honest we want to be. The honest answer is we don't know for sure what's going to happen to the universe in the very far future or what will happen to a galaxy as it goes on forever and ever. But our simplest theory, and something we have no reason to doubt, is just that it happens forever, that galaxy moves away from us faster and faster for all of eternity. I mean, the galaxy itself would eventually evaporate away. Stars fall into black holes, and the black holes eventually evaporate. But there's no wall at the end of the universe. There's no edge. There's no rule of physics or of anything we know that says the universe has to be finite in size.
It just keeps going.
It can just keep going. That's the simplest interpretation of what we know right now.
Ah, if it can't, what does that mean?
Well, it's also possible that what we see is not all there is. So we see a universe that looks the same far away as it does here. And the easiest extrapolation is to say it just keeps looking the same forever and ever and ever. But it could be a little bit different. There could be a universe that curls in on itself on very, very large distances. So it could be like the surface of a ball that is getting bigger right now, but nevertheless has a finite size to it. And all the different possibilities are there. It could be finite in space, but infinite in time. It could last forever. It could be infinite in space, but finite in time. It could have a beginning and an end. And so we have a favorite theory, but we're very far away from saying that we're actually confident in that theory.
Could there be other balls, other bubbles connected to each other?
Absolutely. In fact, that's part of my favorite theory. That's something that a lot of people have been thinking about. And there's different ways to do it. The idea of a multiverse has many different definitions, but most cosmologists talking today, when they use the word multiverse, have exactly something like this in mind, that there's different regions of space connected to each other somehow. They're not just absolutely floating independently from each other, but where conditions are very different. Either there's a lot more density, or even the local laws of physics are very different. The particles are different. Even the number of dimensions of space can be very different. So we're trying to sort of fit together this mind-boggling set of possibilities. And ultimately, what we want to do is to ground it in a theory that says something about the world we see, so we can actually test these ideas.
What will happen, Sean, for us to get the answers that we're looking for? Will it be technology? Will it be a bigger computer? What will finally get us the answers we want?
It's going to have to be some combination of better technology and better ideas. We don't see the finish line. We don't see a path to take that I can tell you, yes, after 10 more years of work, we'll know how to reconcile gravity and quantum mechanics, whether the multiverse is real, and so forth. What we can do is make incremental changes, incremental progress, both by thinking harder and sort of trying to make sense of what we do see, but mostly by getting more data. We're really very excited about the 2010s in particle physics and cosmology, because we've been building a bunch of experiments for years now, and they're finally coming online. Gravity wave experiments, dark matter experiments, telescopes, the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, and all these are going to be giving us data. So we should expect surprise after surprise, and those surprises are going to help us figure out the answers.
How would you rate our growth in 100 years in terms of our growth of knowledge?
Well, the last 100 years has been absolutely amazing, and I see nothing about technology or knowledge of the human race to say that the next 100 years shouldn't be just as good. I mean, the last 100 years ago, we knew nothing correct about the universe on large scales. We didn't know what a galaxy was. We didn't know there were other galaxies. We didn't know how stars made their energy. We didn't know how stars glowed.
We didn't even know if there were other planets out there.
We didn't know if there were other planets. We didn't know how old the universe was, what it was made of. We didn't know that it was expanding. We didn't know about general relativity or quantum mechanics or any of those things. So, I mean, that's not to say that we're going to get the same kind of surprises and progress over the next 100 years, because we don't, in physics, we don't just throw out last century's work and start over again. We build on it. And so I think that 100 years from now, we'll still believe in curved space-time and the expanding universe and things like that, but we'll understand how they work and how they connect the large and the small much better than we do right now.
You spend a lot of time in From Eternity to Here on entropy again, that we've talked about entropy.
Yes.
Let's explain that a little bit more. Is that what the arrow of time is? Is that one and the same?
Entropy is the thing that makes the arrow of time possible. The arrow of time is simply the fact that time is not the same going forwards and going backwards. You know, the fundamental laws of physics, whether the ones that Newton suggested were true or Einstein or superstring theory these days, they all have this property that they work equally well going forwards or backwards in time. They don't distinguish between the past and the future in any important way. But the world distinguishes between the past and the future a lot. We can remember yesterday, but we can't remember tomorrow. Entropy increases, and this notion of entropy, the disorderliness of the universe, underlies all the different ways in which the past is different from the future. So it's easy to say, so entropy measures how disorderly things are. Entropy tends to increase because there's more ways to be disorderly than to be orderly. It's easier to be disorderly. Anyone who has seen a college dorm room will tell you this. And as entropy increases, that is what gives us the feeling that time passes. We remember the past, not the future, because the past had a lower entropy.
Right.
We grow old. We're not like Benjamin Button, who was born old and grew young. We all grow old in the same direction of time, and that's all because of entropy and its growth in the universe.